Welcome to the Wealth Juice Podcast, where we talk real estate, business, entrepreneurship, and building a better life. Living life on your own terms is a choice. We're bringing you the blueprint and success stories of those who are doing just that. We hope you enjoy the show. Quinn, officially welcome to the Wealth Juice Podcast. I'm stoked to have you on the show. I was on your podcast last week. I think that's releasing in a couple of weeks, but we just had a great conversation and, you know, I figured we should run it back on our podcast and give people a light or a sight into your world. And, you know, you're a really young entrepreneur and I think people will take a lot of value from this. So I appreciate you coming on, brother. Thanks for taking the time.
Dude, I'm excited. We had a good one last time. So it was cool to do this one. Yeah,
we did. Yeah. So for people that don't know you, give us a little bit of background on yourself. You are, I believe, and don't, yeah, I might've got this wrong. 27, 28, you're young. You have you started Master Roofing out in California. So give me some background on like who you are, how you got into the roofing space. I'm so genuinely curious about most 27, 28 year olds are not entrepreneurs starting their own roofing companies. So something has to separate you. And I think I want to dig into what that is.
Cool, bro. I'm excited to share. So yeah, I have, I'm 27, born and raised in Southern California. I didn't have a lot growing up. Mom and dad divorced when I was pretty young. And basically I, ended up kind of like single mom raising us. She worked hard. She was working as like a special ed assistant, you know, with challenged kids at school. Really tough job. And she's a really strong woman. She raised me, my brother and sister. I'm the oldest.
Whether you're a new or experienced landlord, one of the biggest hiccups that people run into that prevents them from scaling their portfolio is lack of organization. And most people think that they're going to be fixing toilets at 2 a.m. Because of that lack of organization, they're going to be getting calls from tenants and tenants are going to destroy their house. One of the things that fixes that completely is easy landlord forms. When you're self-managing property, staying organized is one of the most important things that will allow you to scale. Easy Landlord Forms has tenant screening services, state-specific lease agreements, online rent payment systems, and over 500 landlord forms so that you can stay organized, scale your portfolio, so you can keep everything in one hub, scale your rental portfolio with ease, and most importantly, make landlording and real estate investing as passive as it can possibly be. So go to easylandlordforms.com and you can use the code WealthJuice, which will give you 20% off any order.
Basically, I got into business and I was very interested in making money from a young age. And when I turned 16, I finished high school. I graduated going to a community college nearby in order to get the credits to graduate early. So from there, essentially got my real estate license. I went on Google, went around to all the real estate offices in the area, put on a suit, said, hey, I want to learn. I want to work for free. I want to be a millionaire. All the millionaires are created in real estate. So I'm going to go into real estate. You watch Million Dollar Listing, you watch, Selling Sunset, all these cool shows, and everyone's making a couple hundred thousand dollars touring luxury mansions, and it's so easy. And so, I said, this is the place for me. So I got there, I started working with the president of the brokerage. She kind of taught me, business, how to get a listing, how to get your license, put me in touch with a school. So right when I turned 18, I could take the test and pass and get my license. And then I went from that little brokerage to working for a few developers in-house where they would buy houses in like Encino, Tarzana, Studio City, maybe a little bit of the West Side, and basically tear down, small houses with big land, big lot, and then rebuild, right, based on the zoning, and then they'd flip them. So they buy for $1 million, they'd sell for $4 or $5 million, make $1 million, make $2 million in between on their spread after they pay for all the construction costs. They would get a hard money loan, finance probably 70% of it, come in cash with the rest, and then they'd try and sell it, obviously. And if they couldn't sell it, then they'd probably refinance it, get a normal loan, rent it out for a year until the market came back. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of like my intro into the business world, seeing those kind of deals, saying bigger numbers. When I was, showing these open house on the weekend, $5 million. So I wasn't really afraid of the numbers when I went into like the next sales job. Next sales job was kind of anti-aging skincare medical devices. So I got into this field, and that was totally different. I really learned what sales was in this job, and how to convince somebody to buy something, how to transact, how to trade value, and how to close a deal. Essentially, how to close was the biggest thing I learned there. And so did that for a couple of years. COVID came, and then I transitioned into home improvement sales and project management. So worked at kind of a general construction company, looked around, would go out, sell leads. So they'd send me to somebody's house. They have a little crack in their countertop. I'm supposed to sell them a new kitchen. So it's like, you know, that it was taking those skills I learned, hard sell. So taking those skills I learned from the medical devices and closing, and then now saying, okay. And I look at everything as an opportunity to learn and how it's going to help me later in life. So for example, like, you know, going into people's houses and selling a roof, it didn't sound like, okay, this is going to make me a millionaire. But I was like, this is a great skill set that I could learn in order to have confidence to walk into somebody's home and leave with a contract for a couple $100,000. Like that's a skill set that could be used in a lot of ways to make money throughout my whole life. So that opened it. And then one of my buddies got into real estate. I mean, not real estate, roofing. And then I started working for him, and then eventually opened my own company and said I can do it better. But that's kind of like in a nutshell, kind of my entrepreneurial journey. And I think growing up also not having money, I was always reading books on, you know, starting with the basics, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and then just kind of Think and Grow Rich, and just kept getting more and more knowledge and learning and finding the right mentors.
Yeah, man. So one of the topics that we covered on your podcast that really like struck my attention and I wanted to bring up here is that, you know, you mentioned to me that you want to be a billionaire. Like you have this, like this innate, like I want it all type mentality. And I'm curious, before we get into Master Roofing and what you do and why you're able to do it better, because I'm curious about that. What do you think it was about your upbringing or about your teenage years that put you in a position to think that big? Because most people play it safe and they're like, I just want security. I just want a secure job. But you from a young age really were like, no, this is like, I want to think bigger. How did you develop that mindset?
I haven't really thought about it exactly, you know, what the question you're asking before. But the first thing that came to my mind was when I was around 14 or 15, I had a friend named Hannah, and her dad owned a business. And I think it was the first entrepreneur I was exposed to. I grew up, you know, in a nice area, but I was the one that didn't have the money. So like, I always had money around me, but I grew up in like I was in Calabasas and kids are driving a brand new BMW and whatever, right. A G-Wagon. And I'm driving like a 2008 Kia Spectra. And so like, I was so ashamed of not having money growing up, that like, I would even say things like, oh, this is our maid's car. Like I had to borrow or whatever. Cause I felt like I was lacking something, and maybe kids were mean, or maybe it was in my own head, or I don't know, but that was kind of my, that was kind of something I always struggled with. So I think that definitely maybe kind of put like a little bit of fuel in me to say like, I can accomplish something. I remember when I was in eighth grade, like it was around the time my parents had split up, and we just had like a bad childhood with my dad. He was just very abusive and rude, and it kind of caused a lot of problems in the home. And my mom was like this Christian woman that's like, I want to try and make it work. You're supposed to make it work. She did counseling at church and all these things. And so I think there's a mix of like my dad and, you know, not growing up with money, that like, I got to be better. I got to be this person. And then just, you know, I think it sounds silly, but like being rejected by girls when I was growing up, and I was like, if I was just rich, I could have any girl. Like I started to create this, I think it started with this negative kind of toxic mindset, which originally started driving me. And then my friend's dad, who was that first entrepreneur, he talked about The Secret, like the book called The Secret, where, you know, yeah, like, you know, ask, believe, receive. Right. And so it was kind of like, I watched the movie, I read the book, and then it was like, I started reading You know, not to get political, but I started reading books on Trump, and I just saw the businesses he created and kind of, you know, how he turned something so giant. He talked about in his book, like, you know, if you're going to think already, if you're going to set goals already, why not set them big? You're going to already be thinking, you're already going to do it. So why not do it big? And so, you know, the thing with like the billionaire or having $1 trillion net worth and all these crazy things that like just seem, you know, that most people wouldn't even really think about or put the effort in. I just say, why not write that number down on the paper as the goal and work towards it? Because if I have a big target, right, then maybe I'll get a part way there. But if my target was small, if my target was only $10 million, then maybe I'll only get to 6 one day because I'm like, because you're always trying to, you know, and then maybe I'll feel like, oh, that's great. I'm close to my target. But my target's at, you know, $1 trillion and I want to compete with companies like the Teslas of the world and SpaceX and you know, and Amazon and Microsoft and Apple, then like they all started in a small garage. You see those pictures all the time online, right? So they just had a massive vision. They brought the right people on the team. Do I think I can do that alone? Do I think I'm something special? No, I want to be the dumbest guy in the room. I always want to be around people smarter than me. I always want to hire people that are going to drive me towards those goals, and then they can share in that success with me. So I don't know. I think it was probably that in the childhood and just you know, when you don't have it, you want it. And then I think as I got older, like, you know, I've done a lot of work on myself, done therapy, like, you know, figured things out. And I think it's a lot more healthy now of like, you know, it's not like because I want all that. I'm married. I'm happily married to an amazing wife. And, you know, I have all the things I really need at this point. You know, I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. I have like a strong spiritual strength as well. But I think that it doesn't hurt to have a big goal and a massive target. And it's something fun to work towards. I mean, we only have one life, so why not just go out, go all in and try to make it happen.
Yeah, man, I love the mentality. And I think sometimes it does start with like not necessarily like trauma, but just like a lack or a want or a something that you didn't have previously. And I've always tried to do the work to figure out what that is for me, because I grew up like pretty middle class. I never really wanted for anything. And I always wonder why my brain works this way. And I think there's some inner work to do there, but that's probably a discussion for another day. Back to you. I want to know about Master Roofing. So there's a lot of people that get into different spaces, and I can't even tell you how many people would probably say, yeah, I could do it better than this guy, but then they stay number two and maybe that's a good role for them and that's great. And then they help the CEO of the company grow a business. And yeah, so, you know, a lot of people would be happy in that number two position, but you said, I can do it better. And then you went out and I guess subsequently did. So what happened in that moment where you realized you could do it better? And then how do you even begin the process to say, I'm going to start my own roofing company?
So what's the question exactly? I'm sorry.
Well, the question is, you said I can do it better. So I'm curious about the process of you actually putting that plan into action and doing it better than the partner that you were working with.
Yeah. So it wasn't just to kind of start, he wasn't my partner. Okay. So he was a guy that I had kind of taught me sales. He was with me in the medical device anti-aging field, and then he came into roofing at the same time as a salesman. I ended up wanting to open a solar company. He ended up wanting to open a roofing company. We both got to the stage of creating the corporation, building out the business, but I ended up actually closing my solar company before it even started, because I was afraid of the consequences, not understanding the whole legal process at that time. And then he ended up opening his roofing company, and then I went and worked for him. When I worked for him, he basically, we had a falling out on a few deals. I was selling a lot. And then it didn't work out. I didn't feel like I got paid the right way for something, and it just kind of, we splitted ways. And then I said, I can do it better. I think at first it was very much like, I'm going to escape working for this guy, and I just want to do it myself because I can make some more money. I don't have to split it with him anymore. Now it's going to be all my profit. And I think I didn't realize I don't think my mindset was to do it better at that point. I think that I just wanted to get away from him. I was, you know, confident in my sales process that I don't need somebody else, but I didn't take into account the liability as being the owner. Within my first year, I was subcontracting jobs and I got sued. The subcontractor didn't put a tarp on the roof after we had sent weather reports, after we had sent multiple notices and warnings about the weather to make sure you're tarping the roof, make sure you're protecting it, you know, constant management and follow-up and supervision. And it didn't get done. I get a phone call from the lady. She was out of town. My house is flooded. My neighbor's there. Insurance company was already there. Restoration company's already there. And I'm like less than a year in business. And I'm like, what do I do? And so I kind of came to the mindset of, I'm just going to close the business and I'm going to open up a brand new, company in Miami. And like, I'm just going to switch my life, escape the problem and be done. And somehow I ended up, I remember I bought a ticket to the, Grant Cardone's growth conference in Miami. And I think it was the perfect time. Cause I was like, Hey wife, we're going to go, her name's Carol. Hey Carol, we're going to go out and, go to Miami for this event. They're going to try and sell us a bunch of stuff. We're not going to buy it. We're just going to enjoy the couple days. There's a few billionaire speakers coming out and, it's going to be really cool to hear them talk about how they built their businesses and blah, blah, blah. Anyways, when we went there, I met a lot of, they start trying to sell you the course and the upsell at any big event, right? And so their pitch was like this $40,000 product called the 10X360. And we're going to show you all the sides of your business from people, finance, revenue, sales, operations, everything. And you're going to be able to come out to all these workshops. And this is a customer that we've worked with. And he was able to go from this to this and blah, blah, blah. So told my wife we're not buying it. Second day, she's like, hey, I think we should actually look at this. This might not be a bad idea. And I'm like, dude, they're selling you. We're not doing it. And then so on the second or third day, they ended up introducing me to Jason Schweideman. Jason, if I'm saying your name wrong, I'm sorry. Jason has a company in Utah called Dynamite Roofing. And so he was in business the same amount of time as me. I think I was in business maybe a year and a half, 2 years at that point. Or maybe less. And he was already on track to do 7 million that year. And I was on track to do like 1.5 million that year. And so he's all invested in Cardone. And I'm like, dude, this guy's probably like wearing a polo shirt that they gave him, say Dynamite Roofing, just to say that he was this case study so they can sell you the $40,000 course. Anyways, I met him. I met another guy and a few other guys. I ended up buying the course. For $40,000, my wife's mom actually, split it with me. She did it for her business and for me, she really did it to help me and my wife out a lot. But that whole course changed my perspective on everything. The people I met at those events changed my perspective on everything. And that is where I was like, I can turn this company into something great. They gave me the framework of like how to build a vision, how to build a mission, how to create core values, how to look and hire the right people, how to make SOPs and operations and KPIs and all these things that can drive growth in a business. And the people that I met along the way tell, you know, that they were in the same place I was. So I was like, you know what, I'm not going to run away from my problems. You know, there's people out there that, you know, the biggest companies have the most problems, right? You hear about all the time, somebody slips in Home Depot, somebody falls in Walmart, and you know, there's a whole department for that stuff. So things are going to happen. Mistakes are going to happen in business. All we need to do is learn from them, make sure we don't make that happen again, and have a system and a process in place to prevent it from happening. And so that's when I really said, I'm going to create a bold mission. I'm going to create a bold vision. And I actually put on a piece of paper my mission, and I put $100 million was our target. And I was looking at that and I didn't feel good about it. I was like, I feel like that number is not big enough. Like, and I was at another event where Ken Goodrich was speaking. And Ken Goodrich is from Gettle Air Conditioning. If you Google it, they're a huge... massive company. And basically, he sold for about $500 million. I think it's one of the biggest exits in the home service industry for plumbing and HVAC. And he said his biggest regret during that whole time was he didn't set a big enough goal. And so that's kind of like how I got here to turn it into this vision, I don't know if that was the question at first.
No, that was. That was exactly it. Yeah. I mean, it's the interesting part is that, you know, you ran into such a gigantic problem like very early. So I would say 95, 98, 99% of people are probably just saying, you know what? This is not for me. I'll go back to sales. I have a sales skill set. I'll go sell, right? And you do. But to be able to, you know, you hear things about somebody like Grant Cardone all the time. And you knew going in, you're like, yeah, this, he's going to try to sell me this, that. And then you actually went through with it. So I think it's a testament to paying for mentorship and paying for someone to show you the way. That's, to me, that's awesome. I want to talk about like the actual strategy and the acquisition from going to that 1.5 to the 7. I know you put systems and processes. I'm curious about the sales aspect. Did you hire a bunch of salespeople? Did you, were you the front of the line in terms of like the actual strategy? Was it mailers? Was it door to door? What is the way that helped you specifically on the sales front go from that 1 million to 7 million?
So it's really the, there's a lot of factors that come into play. It's not one thing, right? But the overall arching thing is I had to stop working in the business and I had to start working on the business. And so you asked about salespeople. Was I going out and selling everything? That's what I was doing in the beginning. I was going out, I was taking all the leads, I was selling everything. I tried to build a few sales guys to do it too, but then I'd be doing all the permits, then I'd be doing all the inspections, then I'd be scheduling the crews, then I'd be paying the paychecks, then I'd be calculating the commissions. Then so it just became like you're wearing all these hats. So what I had to do to kind of explain what I did to work on the business is I started with sales because that was what I was good at. That's what I was doing. And I started saying, okay, what do I really do in a day? You know what also helped me? I went to the Church of Scientology after that whole thing that with Cardone, because he's a big promoter of that. And I was kind of weirded out by it because you hear all these things online about it. But I ended up taking a course there called... it was an organization course, and they really broke down how to like break down a job into specific things you're doing. And so that course that I took there also helped me a lot with this process. So basically I started creating SOPs for the salespeople. So basically standard operating procedure, meaning like, okay, when I call a customer to follow up, what do I say? And I use ChatGPT to help me write them all up. So I'd be like, I dictate to ChatGPT. Okay, when I create an SOP for my sales reps that when they do when a customer is calling, say, hey, this is Quinn with Master Roofing. Just wanted to touch base with you on our meeting the other day. Wanted to see how everything is going. Write that up in a script my salespeople can use. Okay, now let's create an SOP for text messages they can send for 9 days. Let's actually document what do I do when I go in the house with every single customer. I show up, I get my business card and flyer. Right when I get to the door, I greet the customer, Mr. Mrs. May I come in the home? May I do my interior inspection? Then I come outside, do my exterior inspection. So I broke everything down into like bite size checklists and things that they have to do. You have to call at least 10 people a day to follow up. You have to knock on 30 doors a day to, when you finish a lead, knock on the neighbor's door and say, hey, I wanted to let you know that we're going to be working here next with Mrs. Jones next door. And if you hear any noise, if there's any problems, I wanted to give you my card. I wanted to let you know we're going to take care of it. By the way, since I'm here, why don't I just do a quick free roof inspection for you to see what's going on up there? Try and make other contacts, right? Like when they do that, get on the phone with our office right away with a CSR and say, call our 800 number. The girl's going to answer the front desk. Hey, this is Allison with Master Roofing. Hey, Allison, I'm here with Mrs. Jones, next door neighbor of Mr. Jones. And I want to go ahead and get his information in our system so that I can provide them with an assessment. Boom, we contact, get all their contact information. And then it's like, so, and then you have to reach out to realtors. I did I don't know if I should say on the podcast, but I did the famous baseball player's house in Newport. And the way I got that lead was through a handyman in Orange County that I had a relationship with. And the handyman brought me because of the leak and ended up we got to re-roof that entire house. And so it's like you need to constantly be building relationships. So I took all the things they need to be doing and I started making it a requirement that they had to do it every day. They had to turn in a checklist every day. They had to sign off on what they're doing. And so I took that process and I did that for operations. What am I doing for scheduling jobs, for permits, for subcontract agreements, for employing our labor, for ordering materials? Okay, what am I doing for finance as far as QuickBooks, as far as working with the accountant, as far as bookkeeping, as far as commission calculations, right? What am I doing as far as booking appointments? What am I doing for marketing? So all of those processes and systems, and it's still not perfect at all. Like there's so much work. It's so dynamic because you change one thing and then it messes something else up and then you have to change that. But what my goal is and how I'm trying to look at it now through a lens is like, I don't want to be disturbed with the day-to-day stuff every day. I shouldn't have to, if sales reps have questions, they should talk to a sales manager. If somebody has a question about their check, they should talk to the finance person. If somebody has operational questions, when a jobs can get started, what's going on with change order, talk to the operations director. If somebody has a question with a lead they book, talk to the, I want to be out of it. I want to be able to leave and come back and it still works. Now, the goal is to have me leave, come back, and it's, and it grew. So there's, you got to create the systems and processes to keep it growing without you. But it's very dynamic. And that's one of the things they teach you also is like, as the business evolves, as things grow, you hit different breakpoints, you have to change different things. The hardest part about it is the people. Like the hardest part about it is like, if you really want to run a tight ship and grow a business and watch the margins, you're going to have turnover and not everyone who starts with you is going to finish with you. And that's the tough reality of it. And you have to have strong discipline in place. Like there has to be, you know, if something isn't right, you can't let it fester. You have to call it out and do like a verbal warning and document that. If it happens again, you need to do a written warning. And then the third time is either you're out or you do a performance improvement plan, and they have to be like closely monitored and on their performance. And so there's going to be people that come and go, but if you want to see that growth, that's how you have to do it in order to grow and like stay sustainable.
Quinn, I find it really interesting, the business that you're in, and I know not very much about it. I mean, I understand business, and I know that a lot of people will just tell you business is business, but for your particular industry, like you are, this is how I'm picturing it. Are you working mainly with end users? Are you working with flippers? Are you working with, like, who do you feel like you get most of your leads from? And here's the reason why I asked the question. I feel like people don't fix a roof unless they absolutely have to fix a roof. Like people will let a 15-year roof that might need to get fixed go to 25, or maybe it's 25 years for like most shingle roofs, right? But like they'll let it go as long as they possibly can. They'll patch it, they'll fix it. Does your company do the patching, the fixing? And then also how, like who are you going to get these leads from? You mentioned like going to handyman, going door to door. Is it mostly like end users of homeowners that you're contracting this with, or more flippers and developers?
Great question. So we do everything. So we work with, right today we're doing like a 9,000 square foot office building in Moore Park, California. We're doing a repair here in Costa Mesa. So we do everything. We do commercial, residential, we do repairs. So biggest, one of our core values is options. We want to give the customer all the options. We want to educate them on what's going on, and then it's their house and they make the decision, or it's their building and they make the decision for their business. Now, there's always going to be a maintenance option. There's always going to be a repair option, and there's always going to be a replacement option. Now, if you choose one of those, there's always multiple options within those, right? So we give our customers the power to choose what they want to do, but we can do it as a small repair, a small maintenance, you know, or we could do the whole roof. The cool thing is with us that if you do the maintenance, we actually hold that as a credit on your account towards the repair or replacement down the road. So you have a maintenance credit on your account. So that's something that a lot of people will do, is they'll just say, okay, you know what, let's do a Band-Aid on a bullet hole when it really needs the replacement. But we're going to go ahead and at the minimum, we'll take care of this today. And then we'll see what happens when it rains, and we'll call you guys back out. Most of the time when that happens, they end up calling us back out and they just do the whole thing. And they just wish they would have done the whole thing earlier. But of course, you know, replacing a roof is the protection of your business or place you live in. And it's a big asset, so it's not cheap. And then a new avenue that we're going into right now is government contracting. So schools, police stations, fire stations, military bases. So that's definitely in our wheelhouse as well right now.
Cool. Love it. I want to talk about the business structure and organization, because you mentioned to me the size of your company, and you mentioned like when you're putting hierarchical structures into place and like, you know, having people report to other people as opposed to reporting to you. At the level that you're at, I'm curious about what your business organization looks like. You know, how many salespeople do you have? Like, who do they report to? Like, how does the funnel work? You don't have to tell me every single person, but I think it gives people a good idea of like, okay, if Quinn's a couple steps ahead of me, it's in my business or in the thing that I'm trying to do, even in my real estate company, even if I'm just buying rental properties, I can vision at the revenue level that I need to get to and how Quinn has organized his business. And I know that there's not a one size fits all, but I'm curious.
So sales team is about 6 people. So they go out every day. They go out in a company truck. They're, you know, we're able to see, we have AI webcams in all of the trucks that look outside and look inside the cab to make sure that, you know, we're following safety procedures. We're not texting and driving. We're in safety belts, right? We drug test and background check all of our employees. Second thing is, so that's sale. So let's look at it this way. We have this thing called the master roofing difference, right? That we talk to customers about. So if you're a customer that calls in, first thing that's going to happen is you're going to be greeted by one of our customer service representatives. They're going to see what's going on and book you a consultation with your roofing concierge. Roofing concierge will come out on site or do a virtual inspection, where we can do it over Zoom or over a phone call and go over whatever's wrong with the roof. With the property owner. After that, they'll make a small deposit of either 10% or $1,000, whichever's less. If it's commercial, it's 10%. And then after that, it will go to our operations team. Our operations team will go ahead and handle all city compliance. They'll handle the permits. They'll handle the inspections with the city. They'll handle anything that happens. Usually at that point is when we do a change order for wood replacement. No roofer knows how much wood needs to be replaced. A lot of these guys will say, "Oh, I'll include 10%, 20%, and then they're going to charge you whatever they want. They make up whatever they want. Mm. So with us, we're very transparent with our pricing. We have everything very clear. We only charge you for the wood we replace. We send you pictures. The next step is we actually we'll go ahead and after permits, we'll go ahead and put you in a group chat with our operations concierge and a superintendent on the job that will manage the foreman. And basically they'll send daily updates and photos of everything going on your project. They're going to send you any concerns, questions, you have a place you can contact for immediate response 24/7. After that, you have the tear off, then you have the wood inspection, then you have that change order, then you have basically a final inspection and wrap up. In the meantime, you're paying progress payments as the work is completed, so you have the upper hand as the customer. We're not asking for 50% when we arrive and 50% when it's done. It's like you pay as we get things done, so you hold the upper hand. And then after final inspection, we'll take the final payment, we'll go ahead and reinstall any solar or gutters if necessary. And then we'll go ahead and actually send you a thank you letter and a thank you gift, as a token of our appreciation. Then you have a constant line of ongoing support for years to come. So it's not just we're not just a company. A lot of people will see these companies where they go in, they install a roof, and then they disappear. Unfortunately, I had a customer about 2 years ago, Susan, who she ended up going with the company. They were a little bit less in price. I always tell people, get 10 quotes, you're going to get 10 different prices. Mm-hmm. Price is made up, right? Unless you have margins in place and calculate everything properly like we have. So you go ahead, and she got a quote a little bit less. She ended up going with them thinking she's saving money. They ended up installing her roof. She called us about 8 months ago and let us know that she had her first leak. I came out. I said, "What's going on? You should have a warranty from the contractor who did it. It's a brand new roof." And unfortunately, she did not have a warranty with them. I mean, she was told she did on paper, but when the manufacturer came out, they installed things incorrectly. So the warranty was away from manufacturer. And then the roofing company actually moved to Washington. And so they were not going to be responsive in California anymore. So we ended up doing the repair for her. A few months later, another leak happened, another part of the roof. We did that repair for her. And then in the end, it was a third leak. And she said, "You know what? Replace it." So she ended up going out $80,000 when it could have been less than half of that if she would have done it the first time the right way. And so, you know, cheaper is always more expensive in the long run. We can't be the cheapest company because we have workers' comp, we have liability insurance, we pay our guys, hourly, overtime, double time, whatever it takes. We have company vehicles, we have all the right insurance, we have a very big support staff here. So we do have some overhead, but you do know that you're getting the right service and it's going to get done right. If you get 10 quotes, we'll usually be somewhere right in the middle. And so we're not the most expensive company. We're not the cheapest. I always tell people, if you want to get the cheapest company, let's hop in my car and we can drive down to Home Depot and find some guys ourselves and I'll show you the materials to buy and you can go ahead and do your roof that way. But it's not the right mindset to do it the cheapest way.
Yeah. This is like business 101 or customer success 101 that I would tell anybody. You know, I've had a number of conversations because I do a lot of consulting and I teach people how to get into real estate. And they're like, well, I'm sure there's people that'll do this for cheaper. And, you know, my thought process is, that's totally fine. You know, depending upon the type of consumer that you are, you may want something cheaper, maybe may fit better for you, but it, you know, there is a price to pay on both sides. So I love it. I'm curious about your vision here in terms of like, are all of your projects, are you just based in Southern California? Like is this entire business in SoCal? And then have you thought about expanding to other states? Is that a vision for the future that you have?
Yeah, 1,000%. I mean, we're not going to get to the goals I have by staying in California. So we're definitely expanding. This last year has really been putting those systems and processes in place so that they can be scaled out and it's just plug and play in new locations. We're looking probably to go out to San Francisco in the next year or so and open up like a smaller office there. We'll probably open up more satellite offices in Southern California as well. And then we'll move out of the state into probably Arizona next or Nevada, and then start going more east. Ideally, I mean, we're gonna be a national company. That's my goal for where we're going. So yeah. it's about expanding new territories, finding the right people in the team to help us to make sure we have all the correct licenses, insurance, and those other states. There's consulting companies that do that. So it's really just like putting the brick. It's really brick by brick to get to where we're going. But absolutely, I want to expand on in a national footprint.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, 100 million being too small. You're definitely going to have to expand to get to your goals, which I think is awesome, man. I mean, one of the things that I'm very curious about is who do you speak to that helps you organize things, whether it's mentally for you or business wise? Do you have like a business coach or someone that's like, Quinn, do this, Quinn, do that? Like, who is the person that you go to for advice, whether it's business or life or both? If you have somebody?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I would say that honestly, I don't know if it's necessarily one person. I think that, you know, doing this podcast, I will ask a lot of the people on here questions specifically to kind of understand their perspective on things. I read a book a long time ago that said, like, you know, everyone is willing to give you advice, but like you shouldn't listen to everyone's advice. You should only listen to people's advice that are specialists in the area they're giving advice in. So if you wanted to talk to somebody about roofing, and they could talk to either one of us and, you know, we could both give them advice, right? But the reality is that I would likely have more, I would have a more solid advice for him because of that. And so it's just kind of like, if you ask a businessman who owns a bakery a question about a ring you're buying that's jewelry, like you don't want to, a lot of the time you can see someone successful so that you will ask them their advice on things, but they don't really have any idea about that. So I really try and be selective with looking for the specialist for the advice I need. And then I kind of just like, even if the guy's like loaded and has $100 million and everything, but if he's not in that business, I kind of will just like listen to it and let it go over my head. Maybe it depends. I shouldn't say it that way, but most of the time, like they have to understand your business and your industry. And so for me, if I'm struggling with like a legal issue, I'm going to call a lawyer. If I'm struggling with a operations issue, I'm going to talk to one of the best operators that I know in my network, right? Maybe I'll call, try and get a hold of Ishmael, who sold NextGen for over $100 million to private equity. That's plumbing and AC. He knows operations really well. You know, he's built it up. Maybe I'll call my buddy Daniel, who has a landscaping business that's doing $10 million in Utah. maybe I'll try and get a hold of Jason and do a Zoom call, right? If it's something like that. If it's a finance thing, maybe I'm going to call my CPA firm that was referred to me through a friend that has a much bigger business, right? And so I'm always like trying to get the advice from the right people. And then just the other side of it is you can have all the advice in the world, obviously, and you don't take any action. So it's right after I get the advice, it's about like writing it out. I utilize ChatGPT a lot. So maybe I'll just have them help summarize in bullet points of all the things in my head that I dump into it. And then I'll just like create, like I always, every single day I have a notepad and I have like just shit I have written down that just needs to get done today or this week. Usually the stuff I want to get done in the day gets done in the week. So it's like my mind thinks it can do more than it can, but I'll just cross things off and I'll add new things. And I'm constantly like rewriting the list, getting rid of the stuff that's taken care of. And then also delegate it. And then I think the most important thing is also just like doing my best and then trusting that God already has a plan for whatever's going to happen. And so, you know, I can't have that stress rest on my shoulders. It's kind of like, I'm going to show up, I'm going to take action, I'm going to do everything I can. And then the rest is in your hands, God, and you have a plan for me. And so that's how I look at it. And I get things done. Having the list is huge because I used to think I had like dementia. Cause I'm like forgetting the things I have to do. And it's like, no, you got to write it down. It's like, you're not going to be able to remember all the things. So constantly just keeping like that list is how I hold myself accountable, my team accountable, because it's very easy to, I notice, start on a task and then not complete it. So like a lot of people will like, hey, I got that done. They checked off their list. I'm like, dude, you just sent the first email. You got to wait till he responds and it's not done. You know what I mean? Like it's not checked off. So, you know, that's how I execute and get things done.
Yeah, you mentioned kind of like moving from the in the business to on the business, which I find fascinating. And I think I've struggled with that like significantly, you know, like my partner Ryan more works on the business and I'm kind of more in it. And that's kind of by design based on our schedules and what we're doing. And I've struggled mightily with it. But I'm curious about, you're in this like Dan Martell buy back your time type thing. But has that worked for you, like in terms of the last couple of years in the growth of your business? Like, are you able to step away from the business for a couple of weeks and have it flow the way that you want to? And I feel like it's a loaded question because, you know, like,
I love that.
You know, maybe some days it works, maybe others it doesn't. But like, talk to me about that stage, because I think that's like ultimately, why do you get into business? You get into business so that you can have something growing that you don't have to put all of your time, energy, and effort into, right? At a certain point, or else you just work yourself into the ground. Now you're a hard worker, so I'm just curious how you think about those things.
Yeah. So I don't think it's possible to let me think about how I answer this. So I just left for 2 weeks, okay? I was gone for 2 weeks. I was in Mexico and I did get phone calls maybe one a day from my director of operations. Nobody else called me, only her. And she was only calling me with solutions to problems. Like she's like, hey, this happened, but this is what I did to take care of it. Hey, this happened, this is what I did to take care of it. So if that was 2 years ago, that would not have been the case. They would have been calling me, what do I do? How do I do this? How do I handle this? Blah, blah, blah. So has it gotten better? Yes. Are we at the point where I can leave and the business is going to grow on its own? No. And are we at the point I can leave and start another business and just leave this to fend for itself? No. But it is going in that direction. And I think the people that are here are very strong, that are the leaders here, and they handle most of the day to day so that I can step into different roles and take different meetings. Like right now I had a sales meeting that was run this morning. It's Monday. We just started, you know, two big commercial projects. And my team is handling all of it. They ran the meeting. One of the sales guys made a sale yesterday on Sunday for $45,000. They went and hit the gong. They celebrated. The whole team was in there. The culture's still happening without me being there. They're recognizing people. We're onboarding three people today. I have two new roofers starting. I have a new sales rep starting today that's going to be out in the field getting training. So all of his onboarding paperwork, all of the contracts, all that stuff will still get handled. And I have three podcasts today that I'm going to be focusing on to try and push out my brand and promote my company. Right. And mm-hmm. So if I can get my time focused in this, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to be CC'd in text messages and problems all day long. But the, what I noticed is most of them get solved without me, or they go ahead and they go ahead and wait for me to solve something, but it's usually something that's not a huge deal. And if they have to grab me for something that's important, they will. But for the most part, like I'm kind of like the quarterback, and I'm just like supporting everyone and making sure everyone's doing their job. And then I'm making my management hold their teams accountable. And I'm holding them to really high level of accountability where they've seen me let people go because they're not following process here. And I think that that was a tough thing to do, but it also showed, like, I've had guys here that have killed it in sales and brought me a ton of money, but they weren't the right fit. And we had to cut ties and say goodbye to that revenue temporarily until we found somebody else in order to maintain the culture and support it. So it's getting there, but it's not like I'm not Jeff Bezos or anything.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's culture over everything, which I find to be pretty cool, man. You know, you're not money hungry. You want to be an honest, respectable business that grows, that, you know, holds each other accountable. The one question that came to mind as you were talking is, how did you get to those A players on your team? You know, did you have to go through the mud and hire C and D players and figure out that these people clearly don't work, and I have to spend the double the salary? Like, I have to pay these people what they're worth, because I find that's a big challenge. Is, you know, when you're growing a business, especially in the growth mode that you're at, where you're like, okay, like, I want to keep some more revenue or profit for myself, right? But no, I got to reinvest this into new people, new body, new people that are going to carry me forward. How did you have to hire the C to get to the A? Maybe it's a rhetorical question, but.
You 1,000% do. You 1,000% do. Hiring is guessing, firing is knowing. Hmm. That's the term that I try and remind myself a lot of the time. The best sales rep that I ever had was was in his interview process, my last choice. Hmm. But he was the only one that showed up on that final interview. And I said, hiring is guessing. Let's see what he has. He showed up. He did the work. He did the interviews. And he ended up making, I think, $70,000 in 1 month is what I paid him at his peak. So, I mean, you never know. You never know. And that was like a $700,000 month for him. You never know until you hire. You are going to have to go through a lot of people. You are going to have to like get weed the people out. You got to train them. You got to give them the support. You got to try and develop them. But if it's not working, like certain skill sets are necessary. Like there's been some great people that we've had to part ways with just because of other things, because they couldn't do their job, right? There's like, I think, three aspects to it. It's like, you have to have the skill set to do the job. You have to have good attitude and show up every day, and something else. And sometimes you can have that good attitude and be a great culture fit, but you're just in the wrong seat and you don't have, something's not right there. So building the team and getting them to do everything is hard. And yes, you're going to run through a lot of different, you know, players, let's say. And that's a huge thing. You're going to go through a lot of, you have to get over that. Like, you're going to have to go through a lot of people. You're going to have to try out people, and not everyone is going to be an A player, but when you find a good A player, you know, you want to do everything you can to develop that person further and show them how they can grow with your organization.
So one of the last questions I have for you, Quinn, is I want you to speak to somebody who's either just starting or hitting a roadblock that they feel like they don't know if they should stop and pivot and do something else, or they should continue to knock at the rock until they hit the diamond, right? And the beautiful part, or the unnerving part, whatever way you look at it, is that you never know. Right. So I'm not expecting you to have a perfect answer, but I'm very curious on your perspective, because business is hard. And I think there's a lot of people that maybe should have pivoted from what they're doing to do something else, but kept knocking down the door. But then most times, in most scenarios, if you do something long enough, you will be successful. That's the way I view it. So what's your position on that? And how do you tell somebody who's either just starting or in a rut what to do and how to figure it out? And maybe you need more nuance to their specific situation, but I'm looking for some general feedback.
You know that Instagram picture where the guy has like the little pick and he's
that's
in the
what
tunnel.
I was referring to. Yeah, the axe in the rock and the diamonds
and
right there.
And then
yeah.
and he gives up and he's walking away right before he hits it.
Yep.
So I think half the battle is showing up every day. I think that you just need to get up and show up. You need to get out of, if you're working in like your apartment or your house in another room, I think you should go to one of those co-op working spaces like Spaces or WeWork or whatever and get a tiny little office, because that way you're in like the mindset of work and you show up. I used to just kind of put on maybe a shirt and wear my PJs and I'd still be in my apartment. And it's different when you have an actual place of business with papers everywhere and you know where you're at, right? I think that is like step one. Even if it sounds like an investment, you can get a mail only or access to these places for like $100 or $200 that, you know, if you cancel your gym membership and do that. And so that just having a place to work and put in the hours and put in a full day, put in 8 hours a day. You know what I mean? You might think, oh, my business only takes 2 hours a day. No, put in 8 hours a day, give yourself the time, show up and actually do that and do like learn and implement, talk to people doing it better and find out what they did. Cause I'm sure whatever situation you're in the beginning stage, something I've gone through, something that a lot of other guys have gone through and they can relate to it. And most successful people want to help somebody who's actually trying and putting in the work. You know, you just have to show them that you're worth their time and you're going to actually do it and listen to them. But you just don't give up. Just start, keep showing up. You know what I mean? Like even all these people that have built amazing things, crazy things, like they've had to file bankruptcies. They've had to open new businesses. Like it's, you know, you can choose when it's the end of the road. Don't let somebody else choose that for you. You know what I mean? If you think all the cards are falling on you, it doesn't necessarily mean it is. It just could be your perspective.
I love the way that you put that because you're so right. I can truly in an instant, in a day, change the way that I'm feeling about my business just by a new thought that I have. Like I think about this sometimes. I'm in a rough mood. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't have the answers to questions. I go to the gym. Nothing changed. I went to the gym. Now my brain thinks differently about, oh, actually, no, this isn't actually as bad as I thought. Here's what I should do. So it's very interesting. So much of it is in between your ears. And I say this on podcasts, but like to hear it from your perspective and to hear it from people over and over and over again, it's like you could just think positively all the time about it and you'd probably get a lot further than like dwelling in the negativity of something. And all the only thing that changes is this, right? I mean, it seems like
I was just talking to one of my sales guys about this on Friday. You know, it's every, like you, like everything is in your mind. The difference between me and Musk, me on Bezos is our mind. Like that's the only difference. If I had his mind, I could do that. Right. He knows more. He has. So it's however you develop your mind, you have to be strong in your mind. You have to realize that like, if you want to get big, risk is only going to get bigger. Like you have a lot more to lose. You have a lot more on your shoulders. Like there should be a lot more pressure. There should be a lot more legal issues, like all these things, like, you know? And so, it's you just have to keep showing up and keep fighting every day. Like, you know,
yeah,
I love it.
Without a doubt, man. This has been really fun, Quinn. I enjoy the time speaking to you. I have no doubt that you're going to hit the goals that you set out. I mean, I don't know what it is. I don't know we're trying to work through. I asked you questions about where it came from, but like, I just have no doubt just having conversations with you. You're really on a pretty cool pace and I'm excited to see where you go. If people want to learn more about you, and you know, some of the people, I'm in Philadelphia, so maybe people listening that are local here, maybe Master Roofing, you know, in a couple of weeks, you know, you might be out in Philadelphia, who knows at this pace. But if people want to learn more about you, they want to follow your journey, they want to listen to you on podcasts or network or even like, you know, do business with you, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
So Master Roofing, master-roofinginc.com. All my social medias are at Quinn Vincent with two T's. And I just wrote a new book called Beyond the Roof, A Journey to a $10 Billion Success Story. So go ahead and check that out as well. It's available on Amazon. And you can see kind of our vision, our story, and my story in there as well. And then, you know, reach out to my office if you have any questions for me.
Love it, man. Quinn, thanks for your time, brother. This has been cool. I'm glad we've got to spend a couple hours together over the past couple of weeks just getting to know each other. So thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you, Corey. It's been awesome, bro.
So if you're enjoying the show, one thing that would go a long way for us would be sharing this podcast episode or the podcast in general with a friend, family member, or someone else who you think might benefit from it. It's pretty hard to grow a podcast, and we're bringing out these episodes every single week, and we want to continue to do so. And in order for us to grow, a couple things you can do is, one, leave us a 5-star review. That would go a long way. And then just share this with someone else that you think could benefit. That would be amazing, and we appreciate it. And we're looking forward to bringing out more episodes for you.